Ben.
Welcome back to the show. Great to have you along on this Wednesday evening. Coming up a half hour from now, we're going to talk to our News Talk 1010 legal analyst, Ed Prucci. It's an interesting story. Four Toronto area paralegals stand accused in an alleged corruption scheme that wrongly eliminated convictions for traffic tickets. We will discuss all that's involved and how this kind of thing allegedly would go down. Ed Prucci will join us a half hour from now. Right now, we have an expert and a specialist of a different kind. His name is Dr. Michael Brandt. He is a facial reconstructive specialist and cosmetic surgeon based out of Toronto. Dr. Michael Brandt, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm thrilled to have you, and I have taken about five runs at trying to name your specialty, and I'm going to try it again, or maybe you can help us. Otolaryngologist?
That's right. So I am trained as a otolaryngologist, head and neck surgeon, which is the other name for that is an ear, nose, and throat surgeon, because nobody can pronounce otolaryngologist. And then I'm a subspecialist within that field as a facial plastic and reconstructive surgeon.
Would you do, so you do reconstructive work, but would you also, I don't know how to say this, there are cosmetic surgeons, so people would come to them for a facelift or a nose job. Are you dealing with sort of trauma patients or what, or do you do both?
So I do a little bit of everything. I guess my fellowship training, I spent a year kind of doing subspecialty training, during which time we did a little bit of everything. So complex facial trauma, cosmetic facial surgery, as well as a bulk of reconstructive facial surgery, primarily for skin cancers of the face.
Okay, and you also teach at U of T.
That's right.
One thing I'm always amazed at, whether I'm talking with the lawyers or doctors, surgeons, how do you have the time to do all of that? Because your work sounds so intense.
I have an amazing wife who's able to handle our kids and our family and everything else and make me available to do a lot of these things. And I guess it all boils down to time management and prioritizing and balancing all of these different activities.
So one of the reasons we are having you on tonight is to talk about a new study that suggests that the body and blood can absorb ingredients found in common sunblock products, potentially leading to harm and leading to people questioning whether sunscreen is still a good idea or a bad idea. Maybe you can fill us in on this study.
Yeah, so this super recently published a study in the Journal of the American Medical Association, which is a pretty high-profile journal. This is published through the Center for Drug Evaluation and Research, and that's part of the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. And essentially what they did was a randomized control trial where they applied sunscreen, a variety of different kinds of sunscreen, both sprays and lotions and creams, on individuals, and they evaluated how much of the chemical within the sunscreen is absorbed in their body. And the reason for this is that in general, if there's an absorption that's less than something that they set at 0.5 nanograms per milliliter, then they feel that that's fairly safe or of minimal risk. But what they found is that with a lot of these sunscreen products, the absorption rate was higher than that.
So does it have to do with the SPF level? Does it have to do with the brand?
No, this so the interesting thing is that they didn't mention brand or even the SPF level doesn't really play into it as much. I guess there may be a slightly higher concentration of some of the chemicals within the sunscreen, and it's really the chemicals that work to block the UVA and UVB exposure that our skin receives from the sun. So it's not a particular brand or type. It's all sunscreens do have some absorption in the body.
Is it enough that you would caution people not to use sunscreen?
Absolutely not. So, I mean, we're constantly absorbing things in our environment. You know, the air we breathe, the water we drink, all of these things have trace elements of chemicals. We know that the sun is a carcinogen. When you go and if somebody were to expose their skin in a tanning bed or to the sun on a continuous basis, there is a very, very high probability that they will develop skin cancer at some point throughout their life. So really, sunscreen is a great way of mitigating the risk of being exposed to the sun. Everybody enjoys going outside, and in doing that, there's a balance of risk. We know that the sun will cause skin cancer, and we don't really know, even though there is a little bit of absorption of these chemicals, we don't really know what the impact is, and that would be kind of a subsequent stage to this study. The important thing I was just going to say is that, you know, sunscreen is just one of many ways in which we can protect our skin when we're going outside, both from, you know, sun damage as well as photo aging. The sun ages us as well. So it's not just the sunscreen that can be applied.
Yeah, and people obviously love that healthy glow and will use sunscreen because they know they should, but they'll still get a tan. But as I'm reading about this, I'm thinking to myself, what about self-tanners and people who go for spray tans? I guess there's chemicals that could absorb in our skin the same way that sunscreen would.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, 100%. I mean, any of these things that we're doing are, you know, not necessarily natural. I mean, even though the sun is considered a natural thing that's out there, there's a lot of things that are natural that are out there that aren't good for us. There's a lot of narcotics that are derived from natural sources that are not good for us. Similarly, the sun is a carcinogen, so the best thing is to just be cautious and safe in how you approach the sun. Using sunscreen is one component of sun safety, trying to avoid exposure during peak hours, using UV-resistant clothing is a great option, wearing wide-brimmed hats. All of these things play into, you know, proper sun safety.
Do you ever enjoy the sun?
I do. Yeah, okay, I enjoy going outside. I enjoy spending time with my family, and we all use sunscreen.
Yes.
But in addition to that, we apply the other techniques as well.
Okay, I have to take a break. Would you mind sticking around? I'd love to ask you a little bit more about your practice and the kind of work that you do.
You bet.
And I'd love to also invite listeners to call if they have any questions at 416-872-1010, or you can text us at 71010. Dr. Michael Brandt is a facial reconstructive specialist and cosmetic surgeon based out of Toronto. If you have any questions, give us a call. You're listening to The Night Side. It's 9:50. Welcome back to The Night Side. Great to have you along on this Wednesday evening. We have a special guest on the line. His name is Dr. Michael Brandt. He is a facial reconstructive specialist and cosmetic surgeon based out of Toronto. He teaches at U of T. And essentially, and I want to sort of make this easy for all of us, it's head and neck surgery that you do?
That's right.
Who is your typical patient? Do you have one? What will people come to you for?
They come to me with a variety of concerns. We've mentioned some of the reconstructive issues, the skin cancer, what have you. And then the other hat is people who are just trying to look a little bit better, kind of look natural, but look a little bit better. They're, you know, they could be anybody, all walks of life. We see people, you know, from, you know, typical would be kind of mid to late 30s, and then extending all the way up throughout the lifespan, just trying to look a little bit more refreshed and kind of look better.
Is it unusual for someone to practice both, you know, that sort of the type of cancer surgery, but also do the traditional cosmetic plastic surgery? I always assumed it was one or the other.
Yeah, it's an interesting combination in the sense that there's a really nice marriage there, in the sense that with the reconstructive facial surgery, you really are an expert in the anatomy of the face. So, you know, you're an expert in hiding and camouflaging scars. You're an expert in knowing all of the structures that live deep to where you're working, nerves, muscles, blood vessels, all of those things. So it really kind of raises you to the next level when you're trying to apply safe practices when you're administering aesthetic treatments, like, you know, even the minimally invasive stuff like Botox or neurotoxins and fillers and things like that.
Oh, so you're even doing that stuff, like, and then would you deal with, I mean, when I think reconstructive surgery, I think about people who have been in accidents, people who have had, you know, really awful diseases that require reconstruction of the face.
Right. So my personal practice, while all of those things are certainly things that I was trained to do, I've kind of focused my practice more on the skin cancer as well as kind of the aging face is really kind of where I focus my practice. So we do a lot of reconstructive surgery of the skin cancer variety, and those vary in size, some very small, some very large reconstructions, and then all sorts of aesthetic treatments.
And I guess with the with sort of the skin cancer stuff, are you getting people who are sort of lifelong sun worshippers? Is that typically the case?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We certainly see that population, people who've always enjoyed being out in the sun and people who were raised back when sunscreen was just not something that was available. And really people who were using reflectors and oils and other things at some point. And now, unfortunately, they are paying a little bit of a price for having done that, in that they are more predisposed to developing skin cancers than need treatment.
It's pretty amazing. It wasn't that long ago that people were putting baby oil on their face to go in the sun.
That's right. People are always looking for, you know, a way of achieving that healthy glow or looking better and looking rested.
What should they do then if they can't sit in the sun? Is there a secret to it?
There's a lot of secrets. That's a good reason to come see me. But the, I mean, appropriate skin regime is critical. So, you know, using all skincare products, whether the moisturizers, some sunscreens, things like that. Really, at this point, if you do want to look your best for as long as possible, using a daily moisturizer with sunscreen in it will prevent a lot of the photo damage that's obtained from the sun. Those are all the different discolorations of the skin, and even wrinkles are all formed by the sun. So that's just the top of appropriate kind of beauty or skincare regime, and then you can go through the full gamut of injectables and even surgery at some point.
So we've seen, I mean, so much with Instagram and influencers, and a trend I find really, I was even watching a TV show the other night, and there was a young woman who was talking about having done fillers and Botox, and she seemed very young. Have you noticed people coming to see you that are getting younger and younger, that they're wanting to start?
Yeah, and it's a bit of a troubling trend, in that people are talking about sort of preventative maintenance, so to speak. And my personal practice is I really don't like to treat that particular interest, in the sense that, you know, I, as a physician, I feel obligated to treat a problem, so to speak. So I really like caring for patients who have a defined issue that they're really concerned about, and they just want to make it a little bit better. They want to look a bit more rested, and they find that, you know, they have a bit of a wrinkle here or there, or they've lost a little bit of volume in their face or things along those lines, and we can make all of that a lot better. So the goal really is to look natural and preserve their own unique beauty, as opposed to kind of the cookie cutter Instagram big lip sort of appearance, which is just not my aesthetic and not what we try to deliver to our patient population.
What would you say is the most common request you get from men in terms of cosmetic stuff?
These days, it's really, you know, they try to be a bit subversive in how they go about doing it. They don't like to talk too much about it, but Botox or any of the neurotoxins. I guess we use Botox as the Kleenex name for all neurotoxins, but that's the one everybody's familiar with. But that's what the men typically will look for, just trying to kind of eliminate some of the wrinkles, some of the anger lines, the 11 lines between their eyes, things like that. They just want to look a bit more rested and look better.
Would that be the same for women? Would Botox be top of the list for women?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the number one kind of injectable treatment available right now. Price-wise, it's very reasonable for that sort of treatment. And then you're able to really deliver a nice change for these individuals.
Okay, so if somebody comes to you in like a half an hour, how much younger can you make them look?
In a half an hour, it depends, because we usually have a nice long conversation to start with. I like to get to know my patients, find out exactly what their goals are, what events are coming up, things like that, and then we cater really to what their interests are and what their specific problem is, and we always try to work within their budget and make sure that we're delivering on what their concern is. I mean, sometimes you can come in and treat 12 different areas and do none of them well. We like to focus a little bit on making sure that we fix the one thing that they came in with.
Do you have a website where people can find out more?
I do. It's Beauty by Brandt.
Beauty by Brandt, and it's B-R-A-N-D-T. Dr. That's Michael right. Brandt, thank you very much for this.
Thank you very much.
All right. He is Dr.
Appreciate
Michael Brandt. Thank you. Beauty by Brandt is the website, and he is a cosmetic surgeon based out of Toronto. You are listening to The Nightside.